This is the State of Things broadcasting from the American Tobacco Historic District. I'm Frank Stachow. What does it mean to feel truly alone in the world? What does it do to the human psyche? What secret failings and longings does isolation expose? Hollywood has explored these questions for decades, stranding characters in the middle of oceans, flinging them into the stratosphere and beyond, afflicting them with conditions that alter the mind and body in ways that no one around them understands. Marsha Gordon and Laura Boyes are here to talk about the various ways that isolation is depicted in cinema. Laura is the film curator for the North Carolina Museum of Art and the Movie Diva series at the Carolina Theater in Durham. Welcome back, Laura.
Thank you, Frank.
Marsha, film professor at North Carolina State University and a public scholar at the National Endowment for the Humanities. Hello, Marsha.
Hello, Frank.
Talk about some of the, you know, we talk about isolation and kind of the first thing that comes to mind is the desert isle, but there are so many ways to think about it. A very rich topic, right?
Yeah, I think this is a great one. And one of the things I love about looking at the picks that our callers and listeners submitted for today's show is the range of films and types. I mean, there's some genres that seem to immediately come to mind. Horror, for example, is a perfect one that brokers heavily in the idea of isolation. I mean, how many times can you think of films that, you know, somebody is going, you know, don't go out there alone, right? Like, oh, I'm going to look into that sound that I heard outside. No, don't do it, right? So it relies on the idea of people being alone and being vulnerable. Science fiction, similarly, you know, when you send someone out in a ship to space, put them on another planet, you know, naturally they are alone and vulnerable, and it creates all manner of dramatic situations. But then there's a lot of other kinds of films that broker in more psychological or philosophical explorations of the topic.
All right. Well, you could be alone anywhere. You don't need some places physically isolated in order to be alone.
No, and that's it. And you're alone in your own mind. And then there's questions about the sanity and the reliability of the narrator. Yeah, lots of different ways to project loneliness. And of course, in the year 2020, this year of isolation for America and the rest of the world, Laura, a perfect time to be talking about these films, eh?
Yes, there was a meme on Facebook that it said, we didn't know that when they said hindsight is 2020, that it was a message from a time traveler in the future that was warning us.
That's good.
That is good. But yeah, I mean, this is the time. Although what's interesting about this is, yes, isolation, but it's what we have in common. So what separates this moment in our sense of isolation from many of the films we're going to talk about is the fact that we all have a bond around our isolation and our masks in ways that the featured characters in these films do not. They have broken the bonds, right, Laura?
And we have a high level of communication in our isolation, too, which makes it a very different kind of experience for many of these characters.
One way you can feel very, very alone, and kind of the most common way, I suppose, is indeed the desert isle. Let's take a look and listen to our first film.
The movie Castaway epitomizes isolation in film. In the first act, our main character, FedEx executive Chuck Nolan, played masterfully by Tom Hanks, is never alone. He's with his coworkers or family and friends during the busy holiday season, but his work rips him away from the comfort of company and puts him on a plane for a business trip. Things go horribly wrong on that flight, and he winds up stranded on an island in the Pacific Ocean. For the next 90 minutes or so, the only person on screen is Hanks, and occasionally, his inanimate friend, Wilson the Volleyball. Filmmaking choices underscore the isolation, too. There are several wide shots that emphasize all of the empty space around Hanks, and how far away he is from anyone else. It's just him, battling loneliness, paranoia, depression, and homesickness, all while trying to survive, and also while dealing with the impact of the environment on a deserted island. The movie never cuts back to his hometown of Memphis while he's alone. Until he leaves the island, the viewer is only with him. There's also not a score, no music being played behind the action on the screen, until Hanks leaves the island, further driving home the point that he's all alone with the sound of the waves.
Mitchell Northam talking about the 2000 film Castaway, and Laura, at its release, I guess, a very popular film. Was that, do you think, because that's the year 2000, because Tom Hanks maybe at the height of his career, or was there something about that film that struck the zeitgeist?
Well, I mean, it's a great adventure film, and that's what makes it an appealing hit. What relevance in particular it has right in this moment, and I actually watched this for the first time very near the beginning of the pandemic, is that when, you know, the pandemic hit and we all had this experience, is all of a sudden, you know, our appointment calendars are empty. We have no plans. There is nothing to do anymore. And we say, well, we can handle this. We'll make it till the end of April. And then we'll say, we'll make it until the end of May. And then, you know, it stretches longer and longer. And we're all now at the point where we're saying, the ship is not coming to rescue us. Right. This is the way it is going to be for the foreseeable future. So you better perfect your spearfishing, because this is all that there is.
And your dialogue.
And your volleyball friends.
And your volleyball friends. Give them all names. Very little dialogue in this film. Obviously, it relies heavily on a single performance. But that captures so much of what a person can do. I mean, it's interesting that a film, this is a problem for a film, right? I mean, you have to have action and dialogue, and there's none of it, or very little of it in this film. So in terms of craftsmanship, if we get away from the theme for just a minute, Marcia, it has to do a lot, right?
Yeah, well, it's really hard to be alone as a condition. It's really hard to be alone as a film, right? Man. I mean, as a character in a film, because we absolutely rely upon characters speaking, having dialogue. So to create a kind of context for doing that without another character is really important. But I would also point out that, I mean, we have a human fascination with the idea of being stranded alone. The film I always think of is Black Stallion. That was kind of the film of my youth that really brought this idea home to me. But that process of imagining, how would you survive? And it's not just physical, although that's a big part of this movie, but it's also mental. I mean, how do you get through? We're such social animals. How do you get through a period of extreme isolation without, you know, going crazy?
Yeah, that is one of the, I think, probably the important premise here, and one that makes it enduring. Would you say, Laura, the idea that we find it so difficult and almost we become panic-stricken just thinking about how we would survive in that environment?
Well, it used to be people had a lot more resources for survival. I mean, it was not unusual, say, even 50 years ago, that people would know how to make a fire and things that are sort of basic survival skills, you know how to, you know, hunt and gather and make a shelter and all of that. But we're pretty pampered. We're like the people on the spaceship out in Wall-E, you know, where we can't really do anything for ourselves anymore. There was I love those shows where they force people on these PBS series to live in the past.
Yeah.
And it was really interesting. You know, it's really hard to be a pioneer, and it's hard to live in Victorian England, and it's hard to do all these things. But people couldn't even live the way people lived in the 1940s, because we're so used to many conveniences that are part of the post-war environment.
Well, Swiss Army Man is another film about a man stranded alone, but this approach is rooted in a more kind of absurd, fantastical theme, and really does get into some of the psychology. Shirley, you picked Swiss Army Man as one of her favorite isolation films. Here's what she had to say.
My name is Shirley Yu, and I really enjoyed the film Swiss Army Man. Despite there being a lot of dark themes in that film, there's also a really rich layer of positive feeling. And I think it came from the protagonist having to learn how to accept that he is capable of like extraordinary greatness, that as just a regular guy, you can face very difficult circumstances and you are capable of succeeding in it.
She smiles, and you feel a strange tingle up the back of your neck. Something carnal inside of you causes your body to break out in sweats. You feel like the luckiest man in the world. She sits alone just like every other day and looks out the window, lost in her thoughts. You know that look. She's just as alone as you are, but she doesn't have to be. You could talk to her. Tell her you'd love to sit next to her today and every other day, because life is short and no one deserves to ride the bus alone.
I want this to stop.
Is it not working?
No. She's too beautiful.
And overall, it was just a really great message of having to look into yourself when the only person you have is yourself.
Talking about the 2016 film Swiss Army Man, Marcia, this really gets into what's going on inside the head and the reliability of your own mind and consciousness itself, right? I mean, this is kind of an interesting film.
Well, actually, I have not seen the film, so this is one of the films that we'll talk about today that I did not get a chance to look at. But I'm intrigued by the idea of self-reliance and on kind of convincing yourself that you are okay, you know, on your own. And when I just read a little bit about the film, I actually thought about Werner Herzog's Grizzly Man a little bit, about Timothy Treadwell, who goes out and lives, you know, amongst the bears, and spends time talking into his camcorder as a way, I think, a coping mechanism of kind of narrating his experience, but also kind of keeping it together on his own. And you know, that's a complicated documentary in many ways, but I think it speaks to this idea of how we survive on our own.
I'm going to take a break right here. Marcia Gordon, film professor at North Carolina State University, public scholar at the National Endowment for Humanities. Laura Boies, film curator at the North Carolina Museum of Art and the Movie Diva series at the Carolina Theater. Movies on the Radio continues on the State of Things from North Carolina Public Radio, a broadcast service of the University of North Carolina, Chapel Hill. Please stay with us. This is the State of Things, broadcasting from the American Tobacco Historic District. I'm Frank Stachow, talking about the many ways isolation is pictured on film. This month's Movies on the Radio with Laura Boies and Marcia Gordon. Laura, the film curator at the North Carolina Museum of Art and the Movie Diva series at the Carolina Theater of Durham. Marcia is a film professor at North Carolina State University and a public scholar at the National Endowment for the Humanities. So, you know, we talked about desert islands, but also far-flung planets and even the moon. Let's listen to what Marcia Gordon's sister had to say about that film.
Hi, my name is Sarah. The film I think best captures the idea of isolation is Moon. A specific scene that comes to mind when I think about this film and theme is when we first meet Sam as the only crew member doing a 3-year rotation on his lunar station. We see Sam's living quarters with mementos from his life on Earth, including photos of his wife and child. We meet his sole companion, Gertie, a speaking robot who tends to Sam and conveys emotions through emojis on the screen. After a video message from his wife saying she can't wait for his return, he longingly touches the video screen after her message ends. Starved for conversation, we see Sam talking to and tending to his plants and doing intricate wood carving to pass the time. Underpinning this is a haunting soundtrack, giving a disorienting feel to Sam's world.
Sam Bell reporting to Central. Everything running smoothly. Over and out. Rock and roll. God bless America.
Good morning, Sam. Do you want me to cut your hair then?
Lunar Industries remains the number one provider of clean energy worldwide due to the hard work of people like you.
Us no. 3 years is a long haul, you know.
I know you're really lonely up there, but I'm proud of you.
2 weeks to go, Sam.
2 weeks to go, buddy.
I'm going home.
Looks like we got a live one.
I'm gonna go out. Okay, Sam.
That's a clip from the 2009 film Moon, one that Sarah Gordon liked. She was a little shy about saying her last name, Marcia. But that really is your sister, right?
I think she's worried about nepotism, like getting selected for the show because she's the younger sister. But it was a surprise. I didn't even know she got picked for the show until a couple days ago. So.
Did you watch a lot of movies together and have kind of the same tastes?
We did, although she was my younger sister by 5 years. Yeah. So we were somewhat of different generations of movie watching. But yes, we did a good deal of that in the San Fernando Valley. But to Sarah's point, this film, it's a really interesting exploration of alienation. It's kind of a perfect word because of its topic in many ways. But the kind of outline of this film is that it's about this dystopian future where we need to go elsewhere for an energy source, that all of a sudden this doesn't sound that dystopian. This sounds very present. Doesn't sound very futuristic, I should say. It sounds very present. And it's such a quiet, bleak exploration of that idea of being completely alone and kind of losing your mooring, your connection to Earth. I really like the way Sarah talked about that in relationship to the screen and this kind of computer presence and the family. I mean, it's a really, it's a nice version of this theme.
And it's another film that basically just has one actor, Sam Rockwell, who gives a really engaging performance. This was a super cheap movie. It only cost $5 million to make, and they built a complete moon base in the studio, and so every day the whole crew locked themselves in with Sam Rockwell for the day, so they had that sense of isolation of being locked onto the set, which I think really gets conveyed in the kind of claustrophobia that you feel while you're watching the movie.
It was the same set that NASA used to fake the U.S. lunar landing.
Funny, my husband said the same thing.
Same
when
one. It's the same one they used. They sold it to...
Don't say stuff like that.
Hey, folks, I'm joking. We really landed on the moon. We were the first and last, apparently, to land on the moon. The Soviets decided not to go there because they didn't want to be second. So they said, okay, go ahead and land on the moon. We'll keep putting up... Anyway, we did. It was a true thing we did. And it's also, you talked about this, I think you touched on it, Marcia and Laura, before the break, you were saying, desert islands, yeah, do we even know how to survive and could we do it? But there aren't even the resources out there in space. I mean, you can't even spear a fish, we don't think, out there in space. So that's really the scariest form of isolation, wouldn't you say?
Well, and part of it is the reliance in films like this, and of course the precedent for all of this is Stanley Kubrick's 2001, where the human being is completely reliant on technology, and in both cases on a computer. Gertie, who Sarah referred to, is voiced by Kevin Spacey in this kind of creepy voicing of the computer, which is the tradition of voicing your space computers. And without that technology, you can't be self-sufficient past a certain point when you are, out in space.
But of course, there are also riffs on Robinson Crusoe, which was written a long time ago in 1719, in which a shipwrecked sailor converts a cannibal to Christianity and then makes him his servant, even though Crusoe is already surviving on the desert island on his own. But, the Hal on 2001 and Gertie here, I mean, they're all like, Robinson Crusoe and Man Friday kind of relationship.
Let's come back to Earth and listen to another film.
My name is Saquon Allen. The film that I think best captures the idea of isolation is Buried. The scene that comes to mind specifically really is one of the last scenes of the movie. He is buried alone in this coffin, underground, but not, too deeply. He's buried shallow enough to where he can hear, movement and voices and people on top of him, but he is unable to, let people know exactly where he is. Well, in one of the last scenes, someone that he happens to get in touch with on a cell phone that he has in his pocket, a dying cell phone, they're convinced that they found him and that they're about to rescue him. And it sounds like he hears someone trying to dig or trying to get to him, and they're on the phone with him like, "We're almost to you, just hold on, just hold on."
Are you there, Paul?
I'm here.
We're coming for you now, you hear me? We know where you are.
You're coming.
We are, Paul, we're almost there now.
There you go.
Coalition forces picked up a Shiite insurgent just outside of Baghdad. Said he knew where an American was buried alive. He agreed to show us where if we let him go.
They're coming for me.
We are practically there already.
You have to hurry.
We are, Paul.
You have to hurry, this is sad.
You just hang in there 3 more minutes. This will all be over soon, I promise.
And at the last minute, they realize that they haven't found him. They've found someone else.
Spoiler alert. Buried is the 2010 film starring Ryan Reynolds. That sound you heard, by the way, was like actually dirt just cut, sort of being shoveled back on top of him. So it's pretty dramatic. And I guess this, almost every rescue film is an isolation film, right? Somebody, are they going to get there in time? I don't have enough to save myself. Help is on the way. In the meantime, I'm all alone. Huh, Laura?
Yes, this makes me think of Ace in the Hole with Kirk Douglas, in which he's an unscrupulous reporter exploiting a mine cave-in and making the poor victim wait and wait and wait so he can get as much copy out of it as possible. Because being buried alive is that like a primal fear? I mean, even cavemen were probably afraid of that.
Yeah, well, and so is isolation. What amazes me is that we make ourselves ever more isolated as a society. You know, Mother Teresa was asked. Mother Teresa opened a convent in Los Angeles. And they, Mother Teresa, and they said, Mother Teresa, for goodness sake, you know, the saint of Calcutta, what are you doing in the United States of America? And she said, I have never experienced the level of loneliness that I have in the United States of America. So it's fascinating to me that one of the scariest things to us is isolation, and yet we've created a social environment where we are becoming ever more isolated. And I guess films, Marcia, can take advantage of that.
Yeah, you know, I was actually thinking, both in relationship to Moon and to Buried, if it's not somewhat of a predictor of what a lot of films that are going to be released in the next couple of years are going to be like, with conditions on sets, you know, really requiring as much caution as possible and as little interaction between actors, because as we know, production shuts down entirely if someone in the cast or crew ends up being diagnosed with COVID. It's very risky that if we're not going to see more and more movies that are really about the thing we're experiencing because it has to be about the thing we're experiencing
right,
by virtue of the virus.
Well, and maybe it's because we really experience it as isolation. I think there's a false sense of community that can be transmitted through social media where there's a lot of chatter going on and a lot of seeming engagement, but the actual connection is becoming weaker and weaker. This, I think, who knows? Maybe because we're doing more online, we'll feel...
The dying cell phone signal.
The dying cell phone signal, it's that. Well, you know, but physical location is not the only way to experience loneliness. One can, within a social order, whole groups of people can feel isolated. Prison Song is a 2001 film about an aspiring art student who is wrongfully incarcerated. Here's what WUNC Director of Youth Reporting Kamaya Truitt said about that film.
My name is Kamaya Truitt, and the film that captures a sense of isolation well for me is Prison Song. It has Q-Tip and Mary J. Blige, and it's basically the coming of age, the very rough coming of age story of an inner city young Black artist who has to navigate the world of injustices. First, you know, he doesn't really fit into his environment because he's not this hard, gang-banging young adult. He wants to focus on his artwork, and then after him and his stepfather are arrested and wrongfully convicted of resisting arrest, he not only loses his stepfather, but when Mary J. Blige comes in to defend her son, she ends up being sent to isolation at an insane asylum.
Well, ma'am, your son resisted arrest.
No, I didn't. They just mad because they fired their piece.
They shot at you?
You can't shine a laser pen at a police officer. It's harassment.
You're defending the police?
No.
Are y'all crazy in here? This is a 10-year-old.
Do you have any kids?
No, I'm not defending the police.
It was
okay?
A prank. They play. Okay?
I understand the pain you're going through.
You don't understand. Y'all shot at my son. Let's go.
Mrs. Butler.
Mrs. Butler, you cannot take him out of here. Look, you're making it worse. Officer. Son. You're making it worse. Officer. What are y'all doing?
So we have all of these different characters simultaneously experiencing their own personal isolation. But I think the entire movie has each of these characters battling what it means to be community, what it means to be by yourself, even though you're around tons of people, to be alone because there's no one there that sees you for who you are and not the statistic that you've been made into.
So that was Kamaya Truitt talking about the 2001 song, Prison Song, film, Prison Song, 19 years old. Man, that felt so present today, looking through the clips in that film. Laura, and incarceration, of course, is a hyper-realistic form of isolation, but we're talking about social isolation here as well, right?
Well, this film was specifically meant to be a critique of mass incarceration, and after it was made, kind of panicked about how pointed the critique was. And although it was shown on the BET network, it was basically buried as a release because they thought that it was too provocative as far as its critique on these issues. But you can watch it on YouTube, so yeah, there's one advantage there.
Marcia, one of your picks, Wendy and Lucy, which is another film where isolation is rooted in social and economic instability. Here's a clip.
Not a lot of jobs around here, huh?
I'll say.
I don't know what the people do all day. Used to be a mill, but it's been closed a long time now. Don't know what they do.
You can't get a job without an address anyway. Or a phone.
You can't get an address without an address. You can't get a job without a job. It's all fixed.
That's why I'm going to Alaska. I hear they need people.
I hear it's real pretty up there.
Yeah.
You know, if you need a contact for the pound or anything, I'm just standing here with my hands in my pockets all day. You can use my phone number if you like, you know.
Yeah. That'd be good.
2008 drama Wendy and Lucy. Marcia, tell us more about that film.
Yeah, well, this is directed by Kelly Reichardt, and this is a film I come back to often. It's really one of my favorites of the past, you know, decade or so, and it's about this young woman, Wendy, and her dog, Lucy, and she's broke, and when all she has, basically, is this kind of old car and her dog, and she's on the road. There's almost this, like, Grapes of Wrath feel to it, even though it's set in a very contemporary setting, and she's sleeping in her car, and this is a conversation she has with this kindly security guard who she befriends after she loses her dog, her one comfort, and it's just such a meaningful story about, I mean, I guess social isolation and kind of the desperation of people who are pushed to the margins of economic ruin, which, you know, I think watching this film now and thinking about this film now, where we have so many people who were already living on the kind of margins of making, you know, their rent every month and getting food, being kind of pushed over the edges by COVID. And it's an important film for that reason, because it explores this very eloquently, what happens when you are at the very edge and you're trying to get back in, and it's impossible.
We talked a lot about movies that, you know, set people apart when you're all alone, desert islands, you know, the moon. But then there's also being alone together, being alone in a group. Let's hear about The Cube.
Hi, my name is Christine Cabot in Mebane, North Carolina. I chose Cube. This is a low-budget but surprisingly effective psycho-horror thriller. It starts with several people, I think six, awaken to find themselves trapped in a room with no idea how they got there or why or who the other people are or how they're going to get out. As they explore, the room has several small steel vault doors, large enough for a person to climb through. But unfortunately, the doors only lead into passages that open into more identical rooms. They discover the hard way that some of these rooms are fatally booby-trapped.
You gotta save yourselves from yourselves.
Nailed.
Get him out!
Cube is a study of these strangers under extreme duress. Each person expresses anger, fear, blame, hopelessness, reasoning, plotting, and outright panic. They come to believe that they're trapped forever because they cannot find their way out. And five become four. In Cube, isolation is presented as hopelessness and claustrophobia and fear. You might find it difficult to watch.
Christine Cabot talking about the 1997 film Cube. You know, what's interesting about it, thinking about the premise of this film, where a number of people are in the same situation trying to get out, but they don't know exactly how. It seems to me it pushes back against the theory of the 1950s horror films, right? The alien films, where no matter how tough and how many squabbles we were having among nations, we would all pull together when the alien threatened the Earth. And this film says, nah, actually, the more tense we get, the more crazy we get, and the more isolated we become, which I think is an interesting premise. 1997. Let's move on, though, because, no, I tell you what, rather than go to another film, I'm going to take a break, and we will talk with Laura Boyes and Marsha Gordon about films about isolation on the state of things from North Carolina Public Radio. We'll continue our conversation. Laura, of course, film curator for the North Carolina Museum of Art and the Movie Diva series. She's curator of that at the Carolina Theater. Marsha Gordon, a film professor at North Carolina State. We'll be back right after this. Stay tuned. This is The State of Things. I'm Frank Stachow. Isolation can be conveyed in many different ways on screen, but nowhere is it more eerie than in horror films. Movies on the Radio today talking about themes of isolation in the film with Marsha Gordon and Laura Boyes. And if isolation is the theme, here's a pretty good example.
Hi, my name is John Birchfield. The film I think best captures the idea of isolation is John Carpenter's The Thing. Based on the 1938 novella, Who Goes There? By John Campbell Jr., a group of American research scientists and their team are isolated by geography and weather on Antarctica with an alien entity that can take over a human body and perfectly imitate it. They're 1,000 miles from the coast. A specific scene that comes to mind when I think about the film and the theme is when the researcher, played by Wilford Brimley, Dr. Blair, tells the radio operator that they have to get in touch with somebody, anybody, to report what's going on.
This is U.S. Station 31. You read me? Found something in the ice. We need some help down here. Can anybody hear me? We found something. We found something.
Radio operator falls asleep at the switch, and the officer in charge of the expedition wakes him up and admonishes him to stick to time to contact someone. The radio operator tells him no one talked with anyone on the continent of Antarctica for weeks. They are cut off, deprived of transportation and communication with the outside world. The alien picks them off one by one, thus each man further is isolated among the group, causing paranoia and lack of trust.
Talking about the 1982 horror film The Thing today on The State of Things. Marsha, what's your sense of that? Again, another film where the tension and the problem doesn't necessarily bring us together.
Well, you know, I love this film, and I think it's kind of interesting to think about it in relation to a theme that Christine brought up with Cube, which is what's interesting about this film is the group dynamic. And John alluded to that somewhat in his conversation as well, that it's this group trying to survive. They're completely cut off, and how loyalty shift and how infighting happens, suspicion. And this is a kind of colonization or virus or whatever, the alien is really hard to detect. And so part of it, which should remind us of our current situation, so part of the challenge is figuring out how to determine who is really an alien and who is not, who is taken over. And so, yeah, so it works really nicely.
Laura, let's get to one of your picks, the 1963 version of The Haunting, based on a 1959 short story.
It knows my name. This time it knows my name.
I'll have to go out there.
No! No! It hasn't hurt me. Why should it hurt her?
She might try to do something about it.
God, it knows I'm here. It'll go on and come back again until it finds me. On and on until it finds me.
The 1963 film The Haunting. Marsha Gordon and Laura Boyes, one of Laura Boyes' picks for isolation movies on the radio version 322. What do you think, Laura? What was it about that film?
So, to me, this is pretty much the scariest movie ever made. It was directed by Robert Wise, who also did The Sound of Music. It's about a paranormal investigation. And as you can tell from the clips, it's about sound effects, whispered voices, rattling doorknobs, ghostly writing. It's about an evil house seeking a new inhabitant. And it was written by Shirley Jackson, who was famous for writing The Lottery, which actually The New Yorker just reprinted because it seems so apt for this moment. But along with her sort of horror writing, she also wrote a hilarious memoir about raising her family called Life Among the Savages, because she was a woman trapped in a house with four children, trying to find time for her own work and dealing also with a philandering husband who completely controlled her income. So while The Haunting is a horror movie in the classic sense, it to me also evokes the fact that being trapped in a house with your family is also capable of driving a person mad.
Yeah, I guess so. And the haunted house is sort of an interesting place because you're not alone, but there's also there's the twin isolation, right, in the haunted house, or a movie like The Shining, right, where you're stuck in the mostly empty place except for the ghosts, is getting other people to believe you. So then there's the kind of psychological isolation of your experience of this thing and nobody else believes you, and yet there you are and there's nobody coming to the rescue, Marcia. It's kind of...
Yes, but the one thing, the house wants you. It doesn't want you to be alone. It wants to to be a part of you. So
or
you might want to be isolated from the evil in the house, but the house wants you.
Yeah. Marcia?
Yeah, but I mean, it's also like for Julie Harris's character, you know, is she just insane? You know, is she
right.
delusional that the house wants her, right? Because that's part of this is about a kind of trauma about mothers and daughters and how it gets displaced onto this house. But I have to just comment, Laura Boys picked a horror film for Movies on the Radio. Admittedly, a 1960s horror film, but that this is momentous to me.
I don't want to be a cliche, Marcia.
You did it. You broke out. Did you see the remake then, Laura?
Oh, heavens, no.
No, okay. So there you go, Marcia. Vindicated. Citizen Kane, no blood was shed there. And that, Marcia, is your pick. Again, 1941, Orson Welles classic, of course. Let's do a short clip from the ending. I think we're all familiar.
Rosebud.
That would be Citizen Kane. Marcia, why your pick for isolation movies?
Well, I mean, first off, that is not the clip from the end of the film. That's from the scene where he's all alone in his mansion except for the servants, and he's having a fit of rage. He destroys everything in the room, and he finds this object that makes him stop. And, you know, when I was thinking about this show, Citizen Kane came to mind, and the more I think about it, it is a study in isolation from like the very beginning, where the first shot of the film, famously, there's the no trespassing sign, and then you get the big scary house, the Xanadu compound. It's not unlike The Shining. It's not unlike The Haunting. You know, it has that aspect, and the whole film is really a study in this man's incremental alienation, isolation at Xanadu. And it's really haunting about someone who has all this wealth and supposed power, but is really just a scared, lonely person. And so this film really strikes me as a really rich exploration of this theme.
A theme that gets explored over and over again, including the 1995 film Safe.
Hi, my name is Jackson Cooper. I'm calling from Seattle, Washington. And the film I think best depicts the theme of isolation is Todd Haynes' 1995 masterpiece, Safe, starring Julianne Moore. A specific scene that I think best relates to this theme is the scene in which Carol attends a birthday party. At one point in the scene, she begins to have a panic attack brought upon by the thought and idea that perhaps a disease is infecting her.
Ladies, we are now opening the big present. Please come in.
Okay, here we come.
Carol, what's going on?
I don't know.
Carol? Oh, my God. Linda, what happened?
She can't breathe.
Carolyn, call her house. Someone should call her doctor. And Jennifer, could you get some water, please?
Just try to relax, okay?
It is unclear at this point whether she is actually sick, but the fear of an unknown assassin invading your physical body causes her to panic. I think that is such an incredible scene and so timely for this COVID era.
A clip from the 1995 film Safe, starring Julianne Moore. Movies on the Radio today with Marcia Gordon and Laura Boies. Laura, tell us more about this film.
Well, it was made at a time when a lot of people believed that they had this kind of chemical sensitivity to all of the products and finishes and smells and varnishes of modern life. And it created almost kind of a mass hysteria where people thought that if they were shut into their modern homes, they were breathing, you know, all of the off-gassing construction materials, and it would make them physically ill. And so the question always is it an illness? Is it a metaphor? Is it a delusion? Is it a disease? Who can tell? It's all very subjective if it's something that a physician cannot measure.
Yeah, and films like you'll go ahead, Marcia.
Yeah, and that's partly what the film is about, is that, you know, this Julianne Moore, who is, by her own definition, when she's talking to her psychiatrist, a homemaker, and kind of has a life that seems to be filled with stresses such as choosing the right couch and, you know, placing the right order at a restaurant. Nobody can find a physical thing wrong with her, so therefore it must be psychological, right? She's just a neurotic woman. But she ends up finding this kind of community of people who, like her, are having these extreme reactions. And I was really struck rewatching this film, which I hadn't seen for a long time, by something. She's at this retreat where she's trying to get clear, and the director of the center is talking about how he's confessing that he stopped reading and watching the news because it's so cynical and negative and toxic, and it's impacting his immune system. And I'm thinking, yeah, I'm right there with you. Yeah. Like, I feel this right now. And so I think, as Jackson pointed out, this is a timely film in a lot of different ways.
Well, and I think
she lives in your old stomping grounds, Marcia.
That's right, San Fernando Valley film.
But it's also about, you know, the idea of a psychogenic illness. In other words, it's not just in your head, that what started in your head is, or psychosomatic, it is actually manifesting in your body. It becomes, and then if enough bodies get together, it becomes manifest in a social order. So I think one of the beautiful things about these films, again, when you're questioning the reliability of the narrator, or the principal character, are they really feeling this or are they not? Yeah, they are. If they say they are, that report counts. Is something. What you say you feel is what you feel. It's generated in your head, and the fact that we can't measure it with our, you know, particular kinds of limited scientific instruments just means we haven't built the right instrument to understand what it means to create for ourselves a world in which we're terrified, and a world in which we feel very alone, even though we're constantly pinged by our friends. And so what does that mean in this world, and what is it that has to break through, and how do we make connection? What is connected and what isn't? I think it's a beautiful way of sort of expressing that, and it comes up over and over in these films, Marcia, and people now can't even sit in the same theater and watch them. Darn it.
And we're all kind of making ourselves sick. I mean, the existential dread of daily life is, I mean, I feel like I'm sleeping more and losing track of time and all of these distortions that happen through the isolation and through the kind of, you know, underlying stress that everyone has in their lives every day.
These have been themes that have been explored for quite a while. They're not just recent. The 1957 film The Incredible Shrinking Man, in many ways, deals with some of these sort of philosophical issues.
My name is Sean Moore from Apex, North Carolina. The film I think best captures the idea of isolation is The Incredible Shrinking Man from 1957. While the main character is shrinking, basically erodes his relationship with his wife and friends and society, which are completely severed when he becomes trapped in the basement and is believed to be dead. What really conveys his isolation more so are the frequent times he is contemplating his own humanness as it's, you know, verbalized in his first-person narration throughout the film.
Would other beings follow me into this vast new world? So close. The infinitesimal and the infinite. But suddenly I knew they were really the two ends of the same concept. The unbelievably small and the unbelievably vast eventually meet, like the closing of a gigantic circle.
Many times his ordeal makes him question or try to reaffirm his categorization as a human being. He has doubts of his species, and those increases, his size decreases. I mean, what could be more isolating than to be so completely unique that you don't even know what species you are? And, you know, that culminates in the conclusion of the film, which is, again, one of the best and most thought-provoking science fiction films of the 1950s.
1957, in fact, The Incredible Shrinking Man. Marcia?
Yeah, so first off, this would make a great double feature with Faith, because these are both films about becoming an alien in your own normal world and the terrifying loneliness of it. And I never would have thought about them in relationship to each other were it not for the fact that Sean and Jackson both brought them up. And, you know,
but there's another similarity too in the fact that he begins to shrink because he passes through, I think it's some pesticide or something,
yeah,
which alters his bodily chemistry. And so it's the same fear of the fact that we're constantly exposed to things over which we have no control.
But also a deeper philosophical issue here, on the contrary, that maybe becoming less is how we become more, that the self-made cell, that the mind-made cells of the modern age are the really, as we were saying earlier, the source of our illness, and that if we were to shrink and become, you know, think of ourselves in another way, we might be healthier, but yes, absolutely isolated because nobody's coming with us. What do you think?
Yeah, but it's also, I mean, that's a dangerous proposition, and it's a dangerous situation in the film. I mean, in Safe, you have the world of the character shrinking, and in Incredible Shrinking Man, you are literally shrinking in your world, and neither of them is a particularly functional situation.
No, it's Kafka's Metamorphosis, right? I mean, it's the same thing. What if you woke up and nobody could understand you, but you were who you are? All right, let's do this. I want to tell everybody the next time we get together, sequels. In fact, the worst sequels, movies that they never should have gone on and made number two, number three, and number four. Stateofthings.org, SOT movie. You can hashtag, send us a tweet at SOT movie or email us at SOTWNC.org for your worst sequel. Marcia Gordon, Laura Boyce, thanks for being with us.
Thank you so much.
Laura, by the way, going to be hosting a virtual screening of Buster Keaton's Steamboat Bill Jr. Friday, October 16th, 7 o'clock. Live music, David Drazen. It's at our website, stateofthings.org. North Carolina Public Radio is a broadcast service of the University of North Carolina, Chapel Hill. I'm Frank Stachow.